This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast, where we have another eventful, shall we say, Merseyside derby to discuss today. Goals from Michael Keane and Calvert-Lewin, cancelled out strikes from Sadio Mane and Mo Salah at Goodison on Saturday in a 2-2 draw, but we all know that's not the full story, don't we? I'm your host, Adam Jones, today joined by Dave Prentice, Chris Beasley and Gav Buckland, as we all try our best to dissect all of that. And Gav, I'll start with you today. And talk about the actual football for the time being. What did you make of Everton's performance the weekend?
Disappointing, but stayed in the game. Showed a bit of grit and determination. When we had possession, apart from a 15-minute spell at the start of the second half, largely disappointing, though some players did play well, as we'll probably discuss later.
Was that your assessment as well, Bees?
Yeah, I think that was important, wasn't it? That you know, in previous seasons when they've gone behind in games like that, any game really, but you know, derby, whatever. But to come back twice, you know, when they were in, you know, losing positions against, you know, not just the neighbours, but you know, a team who was recorded points totals of 97 and 99 in the Premier League last 2 years. You know, to take any points off them at any particular time. I know we're all going on about the 10th anniversary of Everton's last derby win, but you know, when they were, you know, in those difficult positions for falling behind, to, like Gav said, to stay in the game. And I thought that at one point it looked like Everton were going to rue a couple of missed chances, whereas Everton had missed a couple of, I wouldn't say sitters almost, but what looked like decent chances to score. And then they'd missed them. And then obviously when Salah made it 2-1 with an absolute amazing strike for Jedieri, you thought, well, they've taken their chances there. So, yeah, I think that was a fair one. Gav said, yeah, unbeaten still, top of the league still. And yeah, you know, it could have been a lot worse, obviously.
Mm. And as B says there, Preno, it is a bit of a mixed feeling, isn't it? Because obviously it is still 10 years since Everton have managed the win over Liverpool, but you know, showing that much character to fight back from such a good Liverpool team, it does show a lot about this side, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And I think I was quite pleased with the reaction afterwards. I mean, Dominic Calvert-Lewin expressing disappointment that they never actually went on to win the game, which suggests that there is a change of mindset at work here. It was a really strange game to summarise from Everton's perspective. Because we didn't play particularly well. I thought a lot of players seemed to be carrying hangovers from the international break. The South Americans especially, started a little bit slowly, maybe not helped by a couple of jarring challenges from Mr. Van Dijk early doors, who seemed out to be, you know, so out to make a marker. We didn't play particularly well, yet stayed in the game, and we're always dangerous, and we're always capable of scoring a goal. And to me, that underlined the boldness, if you like, that, you know, Carlo Ancelotti's brought. We said last week that, you know, Andy Robertson was going to be a threat down that left-hand side, which he was. But you didn't see any changing of the other system to try and negate that. He was more concerned about letting James Rodriguez do what he does and therefore be creative in the final third. And he was an absolute joy to watch again, despite having started very, very slowly. So it was almost like, yeah, OK, you know, we are playing the best side in the league. And they played very well by their own admission. They were back at it again. But we still stayed in the game. We still made things happen. We still created chances. Not as many as them, not as good opportunities as they created. They are the best team in the league. But, you know, we stayed in there and we stayed with us. So, yeah, positive and, you know, quite heartened by that. And also by the knowledge that we know we can play a lot better than that, and we have played a lot better than that. Hopefully after 7 or 8 days, is it, you know, to prepare for the next game now, players will be fresher, a bit more intense, and we'll see something like, you know, the old Everton that we were seeing earlier in the season.
Mm. And we've had our first mention of Virgil van Dijk there, so I suppose it would be remiss of us not to talk about the incident, which has absolutely taken over social media over the last 2 days. I think it's been absolutely bizarre, the reaction, to be honest. But obviously we've had the incident in the first few minutes of the game, Jordan Pickford with an extremely reckless challenge, you've got to say, on Virgil van Dijk. It has now transpired that van Dijk is going to need surgery on a knee ligament injury. Liverpool don't want to put a date on his return, but they don't want to say that he's ruled out for the season quite yet. But it is looking like an extended period on the sidelines, at least for the Liverpool centre-back. Gav, what do you say about that? I mean, Pickford was certainly lucky to stay on the pitch, wasn't he?
He was irresponsible. It was an ill-judged challenge. He knew as soon as he launched himself into the air, he was going to get Van Dijk. On that basis, he's endangering an opponent. But by the letter of the law and guidance, he stays on the pitch, doesn't he? I think, hopefully I'm right in saying this, that once the offside's given, then the only time he can be sent off is for violent conduct.
Yes,
and that involves not playing the ball. Very well, it could be argued whether he was playing the ball, but that's for another day. He was guilty of serious foul play, which keeps him on the pitch. That's an anomaly of the law, isn't it, really? Because you don't know the whistle's been blown. You clattered into somebody like Van Dijk, like Jordan did on Saturday, then that should be worthy of a sending-off offence as well. Yeah, it's an anomaly of the law, but he stays on. But it was just my own feeling was about it was maybe not the best, but it was a bit uncontrolled. But like Gazza at the start of the 91 Cup final, where he was a bit frustrated. Jordan's conceded the goal early on already after a couple of minutes, no clean sheet. And whether that came into it, I don't know. But it was just, it was a really appalling challenge. I mean, David Priest, you know, I don't know if you follow him on Twitter, he's about the only person on Twitter, he's a goalkeeper, isn't he? Who knows anything about goalkeeping. He put up a film today of, I think it was Tom Heaton, facing Ibrahimovic at Old Trafford, and Tom Heaton does exact dives in exactly the same way as Jordan does on Saturday to make himself bigger in front of Ibrahimovic. Exactly the same dive. The only difference is Ibrahimovic is like 2 or 3 yards away. You know what I mean? So in terms of the way Jordan dives, it's not like unusual. It's just the fact that as soon as he did it, he's going to clatter Van Dijk. And he was lucky in that the offside had been given. But I can see why there's an emotional reaction where people see he should have been sent off. And then there's a discussion about whether he was actually playing the ball. That settles the defence. We spoke on Friday, didn't we? Of like goalkeepers and their impacts they have on the sort of you know, how settled they are with their back four. And if you're in the Everton back four on Saturday, you conceded one early on, and the goalkeeper does that after a couple of minutes, you're thinking, you know, this is not going to inspire confidence, is it really? But it was a roundabout way. It was the right decision, wasn't it, to keep on the pitch? And we were very lucky, and Jordan was very lucky.
And I mean, obviously, the conversation's been taken to another level today with the confirmation from the FA that they are going to give out no retrospective action to Jordan Pickford because the incident was seen by either the on-field referee or the VAR. But bees, as Gav rightly says, there it kind of accentuates a real problem with the law rather than anything else, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is this bizarre anomaly, isn't it? That, you know, short of, you know, punching somebody, you know, in that split second, I guess, you can get away with quite a lot. I don't think that was in Jordan's mind when he made the challenge. I mean, from our point of view here on the Royal Blue podcast, I mean, we're looking at it from an Everton perspective, and you just think he's brought in Robin Olsen, Carlo Ancelotti, you know, give Jordan more competition after what has been a shaky start to the season from him personally. And you just want a nice, settled display from Jordan. The thing was, he went on to show the good side of Jordan Pickford and make some terrific saves to keep Everton in it later on. But, you know, you just want a nice, settled start from him. And then he goes and does something wild like that. It is an anomaly with the law, like Gav said. But I think it's obviously been taken to a whole different level because of the whole passion over the game. Obviously, it was the Merseyside derby. It was Virgil van Dijk, Liverpool's, you know, colossal centre-half, who's such an important part to them. And, you know, they were already arguably a centre-back like going into the season with no direct replacement for Dejan Lovren. So all that put together, and the fact that they might be without the, you know, defensive leader who brings so much to them as a unit. There's been a totally ridiculous reaction. We've heard all sorts of crazy shouts that people should serve bans for the number of matches that the person is injured for. I mean, it's just totally ridiculous. And people who should know better, not just, you know, your fella down the alehouse who's sounding off on Twitter because, you know, he can't get a pint in Merseyside now. You're talking about people in our profession as well, international journalists. Some crazy shouts have come out there. Hopefully he can just calm down now that the FA have actually, you know, made the ruling on this.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, Preno? You know, the reaction, as I said earlier, it's kind of taken over social media, hasn't it? We saw Graham Souness and Jamie Carragher have a really interesting debate about it on Sky Sports on Sunday evening. You know, as B says, we've had, you know, numerous pundits come out this morning and say such things like, you know, Pickford should be banned for the amount of time that Van Dijk's injured. And, you know, these kind of views just don't help anyone, do they?
No, social media can be a very, very grim and depressing place at times like this. And it has, the reaction has been intense, it's been extreme. It's been absolutely outrageous in many respects. Like most people from an Everton perspective, I understand, you know, so why Liverpool fans were obsessed by the challenge, but I don't think it was premeditated. I don't think it was cynical. It was ridiculous and it was reckless. But I don't think he went out there to try and do Van Dijk. You can make the argument that Andy Robertson was trying to do that, you know, so when he reacted and dived in with both feet on Alan. And that's what annoyed me a little bit in the reactions. I mean, BT, who were all over the Pickford, you know, moments at half-time, didn't even show that Robertson incident again, despite Steve McManaman in commentary saying he's kicked at Alan. But yeah, it's just glossed over. But, you know, understandably, because Virgil van Dijk is so badly injured, you know, that one gets analysed to death. And I'm just looking at Twitter now, and there's still death threats going out to Jordan Pickford. There's people threatening to bump into him in town. It's like, oh, come on, have we really come to this? It's absolutely horrendous. It really depresses me. And, you know, so it means that Jordan Pickford's going to have a very, very strong mentality to come through this. I mean, obviously, there's not going to be any fans in the grounds for the foreseeable future, which is possibly a good thing. And hopefully things can settle down a little bit. But the reaction has been, you know, so absolutely extreme. There have been some measured views, but, you know, not as many as the extreme views, unfortunately. And it leaves me shaking my head a little bit in disgust and disappointment.
I think what we have to remember sometimes. Oh, go on, please.
Sorry, I was just going to say quickly, we're not advocating this one bit whatsoever, but we've got to remember there was another player on the pitch on Saturday. Again, he also didn't make the full 90 minutes. He went off with a lesser injury, Seamus Coleman. He suffered an awful double leg break playing for Ireland 3 years ago. And Neil Taylor, the player who did that, and again, it was a shocking challenge. He got a two-match ban because that's just what happens. You know, he just served the ordinary suspension. If you knock somebody over, it's you know, if whatever issues they've got with their body or frailties or just the way they fall or whatever, you know, you can't be held responsible for that.
Mm. Do you remember how upset we were last season as well when Andre Gomez was injured by Son? And yet the immediate aftermath of that incident was Everton players going into the dressing room to console Son and people concerned about Son's mental health afterwards. And to me, that was a premeditated challenge. You know, he was angry because a free kick hadn't been given and he went looking for Gomez. That was altogether more malicious, I would say, than Pickford's challenge at the weekend. Pickford's was just, it was a stupid challenge. It was reckless. It was, you know, it was just silly. But, you know, the end product was, you know, absolutely appalling, which is why...
I think you can say... He was right to stay on the pitch, but at the same time, I just thought it was a horrendous challenge in the circumstances because he knew as soon as he launches himself through the air that he's going to absolutely clatter into Van Dijk because he's that close to him. He's not like 3 yards away or 4 yards away. The Son's slightly different, but I'll just park that one for now. But I think he's launching himself at another player. You know, firstly, like when he's, you know, he's flying through the air in a vertical straight line, isn't he, really? And he catches Van Dijk with, you know, like sort of between, you know, sort of his legs. And it was just a horrendous challenge. And he's England's number one keeper and the Everton goalkeeper. I don't want to see the Everton goalkeeper making challenges like that, I'm afraid. I just thought it was horrendous.
Does that mean that the reaction that we've had to it, you know, is justified? I don't think it does.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree with you. And I think that's down, you know, that for the fact that it's a derby, that's Van Dijk. And the fact it's Pickford as well, who, as we all know, has got, you know, he's had stick up for a number of years. But it was a horrendous challenge. I mean, I'll qualify that by saying it's the type of positioning that a goalkeeper would naturally have when trying to make himself big. If you see some of the other videos about, but it wasn't a good look, and I thought he was lucky. These, of course, one of my things about, like, VAR, about the relationship between having a senior referee on the pitch and a junior referee in the VAR booth. Mm-hmm. That about whether a junior referee would ever overturn a decision made by a senior referee on the pitch. I just thought it was horrendous, and in the context of the game as well. He's all gold, you know, and I just think that must unsettle the defence, that type of stuff. Mm. You know, dreadful.
Do we think if this hadn't been a Merseyside derby, do we think the reaction would still be going on as it is now?
I think the reason the reaction is going on as it is because of the identity of the individual who suffered a really bad injury. He's so important to Liverpool. You know, he made such a difference to them last season. He plays virtually every game. You know, he's, as Jurgen Klopp said afterwards, he's played with pain through like a number of months and weeks. And he just makes such a big difference to Liverpool. And having to overcome the loss of a player like that is why they're so concerned and so upset and probably reacting the way that they are, because he's such an influential figure. I mean, I can't really think of any other player in the Liverpool team that is arguably as influential. I mean, you could possibly make a case for Mohamed Salah, maybe the goalkeeper, but I would say no. I would say Van Dijk is the guy who's the most influential. And that's why there's been such an outcry, because they know how big he is, you know, to their cause and how important he is. I had a Liverpool fan, I was talking to him at lunchtime. I still do speak to Liverpool fans, despite what happened over the weekend. And he was like, oh, that's it, our season's over. I said, behave yourself, you know. You're not a one-man team. He goes, well, you know, no two-man team, him and Alisson. And I think he's over-egging the pudding a little bit. But I do take the argument that he is massively, massively important. And that is why, you know, the reaction has been, or partly why the reaction has been, as extreme as it has been.
Mm. And, of course, it turned into a rather feisty game in the second half, didn't it? You know, I think both sides probably could have been reduced to at least 10 men at some point of the game. We've mentioned that Robertson challenge on Alan. We've had Mane tripping up Mina. And then, of course, the one red card that did get given out was to Richarlison late on in the game for his challenge on Thiago. Bees, what did you make of that one?
Yeah, it keeps happening, doesn't it? Things happen in Merseyside derbies that don't happen in ordinary fixtures. And we can't pin it on the fans. We can't say, oh, the supporters are all wound up and they've got the players whipped up into a frenzy. You know, they're playing in an empty stadium there. And they still make challenges that they wouldn't make in any other game, or little nasty fouls and things like that. Yeah, I mean, we've seen it before with Richarlison, I think, very early in his Everton career. Was it? Sorry, Bournemouth away.
Yeah.
And he'd obviously put the head on the opponent. And, you know, he does have that short fuse. You've seen that at times where, you know, he can lose it. Maybe he was just Carlo Ancelotti, perhaps defending him, said he was a bit tired. And, you know, it was just, you know, a misplaced challenge button throw. Yeah, I mean, you've got to be concerned now from an Everton point of view that, you know, the games he's possibly going to miss now because of what happened there. But, yeah, there was a lot of it. And, you know, as Dave alluded to earlier, I mean, Virgil van Dijk had already put two markers down on Everton by the time he got clattered himself. And you just wondered, it was, I don't know what Jordan Pickford was thinking, but he's just wondering there, well, Van Dijk's already put one in, was it on James Rodriguez, one on Calvert-Lewin? You know, they were people who wound up in the derby atmosphere. And yeah, but it's been happening for years. And like I said, we can't blame the crowd on this. Players making the kind of challenges they just wouldn't make in most matches because it's the Merseyside derby.
No, to be honest, I think the Richarlison challenge was worse than Pickford's. I know Gav's expressed why he thought the Pickford was such a bad challenge, but I still genuinely believe it was just reckless stupidity. I genuinely think that Richarlison, you know, dived in with malice aforethought in that one. He just, the red mist came down and he just lunged in. And, you know, I know if you look at the images of the incident and it looks horrific, if you actually look at the incident properly, it's his trailing knee that catches Thiago, which is probably what saved him from really serious injury, but his leg still buckled. And to me, that was worse than Pickford's, because that was like, he felt like he was trying to cause some kind of damage to an opponent there. And he does have that in his makeup. You know, he's trying to overcome it, and he is doing things differently now. I mean, that, you know, rolling around on the pitch and going down injured two or three times every game seems to have been, you know, sort of moved out of his game now. But he still does have the occasional, you know, moments, hopefully only once or twice a season, where the red mist does come down. And it did come down on that occasion. And he's been rightly punished and we'll miss him for three games. The only plus side being that, you know, it gives an opportunity to Anthony Gordon, who's been, you know, chomping at the bit. Bernard, who's looked impressive when he's come in. Possibly even Alex Iwobi, who's looked okay when he's come on. So, you know, it's an opportunity for somebody else now. But yeah, we'll miss him because he's such a good player.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Well, Richarlison obviously felt the need to release an apology shortly after the final whistle, didn't he, to Thiago for his challenge. Thankfully, it seems that Thiago's injury isn't going to be, well, certainly not as bad as Virgil van Dijk's, but it doesn't look like it's going to keep him out for very long, at least. Gav, you know, you've as Preno says, you've shared your thoughts on the Pickford challenge. What did you make of that, Richarlison?
I thought my Preno was worse. Mm. It was worse because that was violent conduct, wasn't it? I mean, the Pickford's one, he could say he was trying to play the ball. It might be stretching a point, but that was just a violent lunge, wasn't it? That could have had a far worse outcome than what it did, to be honest with you. It appeared out of nowhere as well. You know, sometimes you see players do that when they've been rattled, don't they? And they've, you know, they've the red mist. But I can't remember Anson in the time before then, that, you know, maybe you think by Richarlison would react like that. He'd had a sort of frustrating game, hadn't he, as well? And I'm with Prenner, it was the worst challenge. I mean, as balanced, by the way, Robertson should have been sent off. Yeah. That was violent conduct. He kicked out something weak. He could have caused a serious injury there. I thought he should have gone, to be fair. It wasn't a good look, the fact that it was pretty much ignored across all sorts of outlets on TV outlets over the weekend. But yeah, Richarlison, no excuses. Is that three straight reds now, is it, for violent conduct he's had? Something like that in his career, which is...
He's had two at Everton, hasn't he?
But I just need to watch himself there. I thought he had a frustrating game, albeit he should have scored. I mean, the one on the first half, you know, when you talk about wasted chances, you know, the one where Godfrey got free and laid him in, he's got Gomez and Zini on his left, hasn't he? Could have played either one of them, and he shot over. And maybe that's just part of the frustration of the whole afternoon where it wasn't going for him. But yeah, that was a terrible challenge, and that could have had far worse outcome than what it did.
I mean, we'll stick with you, Gav. I mean, like, we've talked about that Richarlison challenge. Obviously, we've talked about the Robertson one, which really could have got him a red card. We've talked about, you know, that little trip from Mane on Mina, which could have got him at least booked, if not, like, you know, a second yellow or something like that. I mean, what is it about this Merseyside derby? Why do players feel the need to do things like that in these games?
I mean, wasn't there a derby match a couple of years ago where there was no bookings? I think that's the first sending off to Funes Mori. And Liverpool haven't had one for 8 years, so it hasn't been that dirty contest, though, certainly over the last decade. Maybe that's because of the disparity between the teams during that time, you know, helps. But as you say, I think he's made the point there is ironically enough, Van Dijk sort of set the tone for the afternoon, didn't he? At the start. I'm just wondering as well whether, you know, with there's no crowd there, do players think they can get away with stuff that they wouldn't get away with if there's a crowd there? I'm just wondering in a full stand, and I don't want to pick on Van Dijk here, but I will. Would he class it into Rodriguez in the opening minutes in front of 40,000 needlessly?
Maybe not.
It's funny talking about, you know, the derby match scenario and, like, you know, so the, why do things happen in that fixture rather than any others? I just wonder whether it's because there's a acceptance now that Everton are getting a bit closer to Liverpool. Still got a long, long way to go. But, you know, over the last, you know, sort of 7 or 8 years, we've been the whipping boys in derby matches. It's been quite a condescending attitude towards little Everton. Whereas now, you know, we're top of the league, still got, you know, loads and loads of work to do. Still only a handful of games are being played. But there's always almost an acceptance that we are rivals now. You know, Jurgen Klopp said as much in the build-up to the game. I think he might have been over-egging it a little bit, you know, sort of trying to, you know, so I don't know, set the tone a little bit by saying that, you know, how he sees Everton as challengers and will be challengers in the very near future. So I just wonder if that's got into, like, the Liverpool mindset a little bit. And, you know, they see Everton as more of rivals and more of challengers than they have been in recent years. And so it adds a little bit more intensity to it, a little bit like you used to get maybe, you know, with the Arsenal-Man United games, of, you know, not that long ago, where you could guarantee fireworks between those two because they saw each other as genuine rivals. Now, I know we're not rivals for silverware. Yes, we've got an awful lot to do before that happens. But maybe just subconsciously, there's a little acceptance there that, hang on, this team's, you know, getting closer to us now and they need to put themselves out a little bit more. I don't know. Maybe I'm just reading far too much into it. But there does seem to be a different, you know, different mindset about it.
No, I think Prano raises a really good point there, Bees. I mean, Everton, you know, we talked at the start of this podcast that Everton didn't play at the kind of level that we've been used to so far this season. There were only glimpses of that, you know, lovely slow build attack and football. But we played against a very good Liverpool team this weekend and got a point out of it. Maybe disappointed we didn't get 3 points out of it. It does kind of show a significant growth over the last few months, doesn't it?
Definitely. I think it's a combination not just of the improvement in ability with the new signings and the way that he's galvanised the midfield, got them playing this season. I think it's a mentality thing as well, because, you know, let's not underestimate, it was actually today, isn't it? It's the anniversary 1 year on of the Everton-West Ham game when Marco Silva said, you know, it was a must-win fixture beforehand. And poor Marco didn't get a single come-from-behind win in the Premier League in his whole tenure. You know, that wasn't obviously a win at the weekend. But, you know, to come back twice, like we said, against such a talented Liverpool team, they obviously came back 2 down at Watford last season. There is a lot more of a resolute attitude within the camp, and the fact that the games this season where, you know, they've gone behind, conceded the first goal. I mean, under the previous regime, you know, that'd be curtains then. You'd be like, oh, that set the tone for the afternoon. There's no way coming back. But yeah, they you know, it's always great to get your noses in front. But, you know, with this Everton team now, first time in a long time, if they do go 1-0 down, you know, it's not doom and gloom. It's not the end of the world. There is a chance that they will come back.
And then, Gav, to put this, you know, this start to the season into context, you know, this is 13 points from a possible 15 at the start of the season. You take that, don't you?
I said that on Friday, that a defeat wouldn't necessarily make the start of the season disaster, considering we've won 7 on the bounce. So I think, though, we may want to come to the score forecast and add in a bit, but I think if you go in a derby, if you go into the derby top of the league, and you then, and after the derby you're still top of the league, you'd probably take that, wouldn't you? You know, I would. Yeah. I mean, I'd say be taking a draw on Saturday after 5 minutes where there's a possible penalty and they're going down to 10 men and getting beat 1-0, you know. Yeah, I think you've got to see Saturday's performance for all, like, we didn't play as well as what we have done this season. In the context of, say, the international fortnight, and in the context of, like, 8 games where we played really well. As B said, we've been behind in a few games, haven't we? We've won games where we conceded equalisers and stuff and gone up the other end and scored straight away. So we've shown a bit of character there as well. So, and we did that in abundance, I thought, on Saturday.
And, you know, we've talked about the collective performance might not being up to the same standards as we've seen this season, but I think there were really some good individual performances across the 11 this weekend. And Preno, Ben Godfrey came on for his Everton debut in, you know, probably trying circumstances, coming on at right back for his first game against Liverpool, but he did really, really well, didn't he?
He did tremendously, yeah, especially when you bear in mind he's a centre-back, you know, and he was asked to come on and play, you know, right back, arguably their most dangerous flank, you know, where an awful lot of the, you know, sort of threat comes from. And he slotted in quite seamlessly. And it wasn't just, okay, let's just like, you know, have what we hold and let's just like, you know, play myself in slowly. He was quite proactive as well. He was involving himself in raids up the pitch. He was getting involved and using the ball very well. First, you know, sort of glimpse we've had of him, and it was very, very impressive. It does lend the question, I suppose, you know, if Seamus has to miss a game or two. I know Carlo referenced John Joe Kenny straight after the game, but, you know, so has Godfrey done enough already to suggest that maybe, you know, he deserves an opportunity to continue there rather than John Joe? But it was reassuring, and it just underlines again how important it was, you know, sort of to add to the squad when we did, you know, in that area. I know we were very, very worried about the prospect of losing a centre-back to injury, but, you know, not really thinking that right-back was going to be an issue. But, you know, he solved that by, you know, sort of being able to, you know, fill both roles. So, yeah, very heartening. And one of a number of good performances. I know I said players started slowly, James being one of them, but he still showed what absolute class he oozes. I mean, you could sit and watch him, you know, on repeat over and over again. Just a great, great footballer. And, you know, influential, very influential in both goals. So, you know, another good performance from him. And, yeah, you know, elsewhere, maybe not so many, you know, sort of influential performances. You know, Alan looked like he was still labouring a little bit, you know, so after the problem he's had. But, yeah, Godfrey certainly, you know, was a shining light, and absolutely thrilled with him.
Mm. At the time of recording, of course, we're still waiting to hear the full extent of Seamus Coleman's injury. It's a hamstring issue, but we're not sure how long he'll be out for, or even if he'll be fit for the game at the weekend, of course. But Bees, if Seamus Coleman were to miss this game at the weekend, would you be comfortable throwing Ben Godfrey straight into the side?
Yeah, after what we've seen against Liverpool, definitely. As Dave said, it wasn't just his defensive duties, the fact that he was, and you don't get particularly a lot of these chances, you know, marauding forward when he could against Liverpool. And you think, as somebody who's primarily a centre-back, and I know he's played holding midfielder earlier in his career, you know, to be up and down that flank, it was very encouraging. He got some really strong blocks in, you know, a good awareness there from his body on the line, old school, almost Phil Jagielka or Alan Stubbs-esque at times. So, yeah, it was very encouraging debut because, you know, you had to show a bit of concern of him, you know, having this baptism of fire. And I know he actually played a year of Premier League with Norwich last season, but coming in, making his Everton debut in such circumstances was very encouraging. And it's nice to have those options because, like we were thinking, oh, the right-back position is quite up in the air there. And, and even when he gets fit again, Mason Holgate has played in that position. You know, at times he's spent half a season on loan at West Brom, more or less playing as a right wing-back. So the fact there is another centre-back option in there, it might mean that Carlo would consider possibly moving a few players around in the back four.
Mm. And then Gav on the other flank as well, we've got Luca Dean, got himself another assist at the weekend with a fantastic cross for Calvert-Lewin's goal. Like he's been on fire so far this season, really, hasn't he?
Yeah, you know, he's... I was having a conversation on Saturday night, you know, from a socially distanced angle, by the way, about the merits of Luca Dean and Leighton Baines, you know, and as you know, at my perspective on Baines, it's like them going forwards, but I don't think he was as good as what defensively is what people thought he was. But I think Luca Dean has got the balance right, as far as I'm concerned, as being not as good as maybe Leighton going forward, but he, you know, in terms of being inventive and that type of thing, but in terms of crossing balls, then he can do it, but far stronger defensively. And, you know, we can say he had the ball better, and you saw that on Saturday. I thought he sort of got ignored, I think, in the post-match sort of discussions. Right? I thought by and large, he was excellent. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, Liverpool weren't as much of a threat on the right as what they were on the left. I know you could say that because you had Hammers on our right, but I thought he was tremendous. I mean, that cross in the first half, how he dug that one out for Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah.
So, he sort of has to do a 180-degree turn, doesn't he, to get the ball into the penalty box. It was quality. I thought he was tremendous, Luca Dean, on Saturday. And if there's a better left-back in the Premier League at the moment, I can't think of one off the top of my head. And I'm thinking about whoever was playing for Liverpool on Saturday there. I thought Luca Dean was tremendous. And but in keeping with the, you know, the performance he's had thus far this season, he's been superb.
And Prano, I suppose, you know, the biggest accolade you can give is defensive display on the weekend was that I forgot Mo Salah was even playing until he popped up in the box to score. Like, he just wasn't in the game at all, really, was he?
Dean was absolutely magnificent. If you think about it, we were concerned that he limped off 10 minutes from the end of France's international on Wednesday night. And he was a guy that we thought, oh gosh, you know, is that going to hamper him at all? He was one of the few players that didn't seem affected by the international activities during the week. He was just absolute quality all the way through. Offensively, he did what he's done for most of the season, dugouts, penetrating, really dangerous crosses all the way through. But equally, so defensively, he was solid. Liverpool, well, they scored the opening goal through less than robust, fullback play on the opposite flank. But you just never saw that at all from Dean. And I'm probably with Gavin on this one. Big fan of Andy Robertson's abilities, maybe not his cynicism on occasions. I think Dean is at least, so as effective as him, if not better. An absolute top player. And, we're lucky to have him. He's playing some really good football at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Are those sentiments you'd agree with, Bees?
Definitely. I mean, he's even shown at times, isn't he? You get the opposite of Ben Godfrey in that he's had to cut inside and play centre-back in some of those cup games this season. I mean, he's been absolutely terrific. I mean, that's what you'd expect for somebody of his pedigree. You look at who he's played for in his career, Paris Saint-Germain, Roma, Barcelona. He's always been at top clubs, and he's a France international, the reigning world champions. It was always going to be, left back is one of the hardest positions to fill in getting top quality in there, a dearth of natural left footers. So to come on after Leighton Baines, who is obviously the Everton's best left back, certainly of the modern era, the Premier League era, I'd say, is to have that seamless transition to Luca Dean and what he's doing now. It's what we'd expect for something like that. And obviously he's wearing the armband as well when Seamus Coleman came off, and as an overseas player, not from the British Isles. I mean, that's a great accolade as well for him as well, to be picked out as captain.
He even tried the impossible. He even tried to persuade the referee to allow Richarlison to stay on.
The only criticism of Silva's performance on Saturday, did he have butter on his hands when he was taking his long throws, because a couple of them didn't work out, did they? But I just echo what the lads were saying there. I think he's a tremendous left back, and he's getting into the territory of being like one of the best to see him play for Everton, to be honest with you. Already, I think he's top class, both especially defensively.
I think the one thing that we can agree on from the weekend is that it's just a huge shame that Preno didn't have to shell out for a big bottle of champagne for me, to be honest.
You know what? I was absolutely desperate to. I'd gone for 2-2, obviously. You went for a 3-2, Everton, which would have been your fourth successive correct prediction, which, given how zany the scores have been this season, that's some achievement. That, to pluck a 4-2 for Brighton, 4-1 West Ham. So, when we made it 2-2, I was genuinely rooting for you. I genuinely wanted to get it wrong, and I'd have been cartwheeling all the way down to the supermarkets. I think Greg O'Keefe, formerly of this parish, also chipped in and said that, look, if you get it right, I'll join in with you. So we might even extend it to a bottle of Crystal
He came over and spoke to me before the match started, Greg, and he was just like, oh, I really hope this comes in for you. And to be honest, when we had that free kick right at the end, I would have been on the pitch. It would have been no stopping me. Done a David Moyes after West Ham's goal yesterday.
was it you who had to wear with the VAR officials who disallowed the Liverpool goal then? I sent a message to you about all, didn't I, when you said on Twitter, there's still goals in this. I said, still in the game here, I don't worry, And he said, but I mean, I'm with Preno. It's mad as it's, when that free kick, we had the free kick at the end, I was thinking, I wasn't really like bothered about where 3-2 yet, because I was thinking, Hans going to come up again with the guns here, four time on the run. Yeah, but never mind,
it was a VAR moments as well.
Two
points. It was just It was absolute lunacy, really, wasn't it? I mean, the game is a very, very strange game at the moment when you're getting decisions like that. But, you know,
yeah,
we had so many go against us last season. And let's not forget, Liverpool had so many go in their favour last season. So, you know, so maybe that's just a small fraction of it starting to even itself out a little bit.
Well, Dave, as Liverpool said last season, Dave, you know, when you're top of the league, some of these decisions go for you.
What a note to end on, eh? that's all we've got time for today. Thank you very much for tuning in. We'll be back a little bit later on this week to preview Everton's game against Southampton at the weekend. But for now, thank you very much for listening. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.